Serotalk and Serotech are giving away 3 gift cards. Just tell us your favorite 2010 podcast or tech chat. Send an email to resources@serotalk.com. Include your first and last name, working email address, and number of the podcast or tech chat and the segment you liked.
Please.
3 qualifying entries will be drawn on December 31st at noon Eastern U.S. The first name drawn will receive a $50 gift card for Serotech software and services. 2 others will each receive a $25 Serotech gift card. Let us know when we made a fool of ourselves.
With your pants on the ground.
Made a mess of things, made you angry.
Don't drag the rest of us down by saying, well, we insist that LLS stick around.
Saved you money, or just made you laugh.
Oh, man.
Deadline for entries is December 30 at midnight Eastern U.S. And don't forget, you can buy a Serotech gift card for the holidays or their birthday by going to serotech.com/gift cards. So email us your favorite 2010 Serotalk moment and get ready to win from
Hi, this is Buddy Brandon from Serotech Technical Support. From my family to yours, here's wishing you a Merry Christmas and a Happy Holiday Season.
Happy Christmas!
Comments made on the Serotalk podcast are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotech Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Welcome to the Serotalk podcast.
Serotalk podcast.
Welcome to the Serotalk podcast, your portal to the accessible digital lifestyle.
www.serotalk.com.
A production of Serotech Corporation, creators of System Access, the System Access mobile network, and SA2Go. Learn about new technology, cool software, useful websites, education, information, entertainment, user comments, and much more. And now, here's your host, Michael Locke.
Welcome to Serotalk. Podcast 57 for December 2010. This is Michael Loff.
And I'm Ricky Enger.
And I'm Joe Steinkamp.
We want to invite you to listen to the Samnet Christmas and Holiday Concert that took place on December 16th in our all-new updated voice chat. It was the first time in stereo. I don't know anyone doing voice chat in stereo, but we is over at Samnet. So check that out if you like great quality and some great Christmas performances. And if you just like to talk to people in stereo, you can do all that now with the Samnet chat.
That's right. I don't know how we managed to gather so many people with so much talent all in one place, but it was great to listen to. So if you weren't able to catch it live, definitely check out the archive.
Well, you know, all blind people are musicians, right? We're all like Ronnie and Stevie and Ray.
Oh, yeah, right? Absolutely.
That's right.
Years ago in a bar, a girl came up to me and she goes, oh, you're blind. What musical instrument do you play? And that was really awkward when I had to tell her, yeah, I play records. They're really great. It takes a lot of practice.
Oh, I thought you were going to say you play the flute, but okay, moving on. We got a lot of stories to cover, and on the subject of music, here's one I think is kind of interesting. After 5 years of unemployment, 60-year-old Douglas Daniels is going back to work as a sound engineer with equipment that is purchased through the good old rehab system. But like many folks, he gave up his career in music in the 90s when equipment went all digital and he was losing his eyesight. But after a 4-page working proposal that led to a 28-page grant and some $17,000 later and a little help from Brian Smart, he has put together a software studio and will be getting back into producing bands. He does a lot of folk music and acoustic work. So we wish him well with that. And Joe, I want to talk to you about this coming in from the rehab side. There are financial options for folks wanting to pursue entrepreneurial projects, aren't there?
Absolutely. Each state has their own way of handling that. Some call it self-employment, others call it a joint business proposal or things like that. But it really does give you an opportunity to explore an avenue you might not have thought was available to you. And VR at times gets a bad rap. And you might find that just an exploration through the website of your state or a conversation with a rehab engineer or even just a little bit of an email/call to your local representative might actually give you some opportunities that you might not have considered earlier. So there are programs out there that allow you to do those things. Also, you can talk to SBA, the Small Business Administration, and look into those entrepreneurial opportunities. There's a hard word for me today. And the other thing I would also encourage people to do is do a little research and networking. The internet is very vast, and being able to find other people who've done something very similar to what this gentleman has done might also bear some fruit for you in what you want to do for a living. And that's really important. The other thing I would also stress is, and I saw this a lot during my time in rehab, is you'll go much further if you learn Braille music and learning music theory, how to read music. Playing by ear is fantastic. Some of us have that ability to do that, myself not included. But being able to read music, play music correctly will really help you a great deal. And those guys at Dancing Dots and some of the other side projects that are out there are definitely something you'll have to get familiar with as well. So there are many things out there, from piano tutors all the way up to major recording artists out there, if you want to get into music and make it one of the best careers you can possibly do.
And we also have an article called 12 Things You Should Know as a Music Producer. So again, as Joe talked about, it depends on whether you're producing talent or writing or arranging music. So check those links out at serotalk.com.
We're also going to add a link in there about how to find the resources in your area for vocational rehabilitation.
Yes, we found a great resource list by state, so check that out at serotalk.com. Writer Oliver Sacks is face blind. And again, you know, the more I do this podcast, the more I learn. I didn't realize there is a specific visual impairment that has to do with the inability to discern people's faces.
I mean, no, neither did I. And the funny thing is that he didn't either, at least until he was a bit older. He sort of thought that his inability to remember people based on what they look like was just kind of a personality thing, because his mom experienced the same thing. And you know, he just thought, oh, this is either the way everyone is or this is just kind of a thing. But it turns out that this is, in fact, a condition where people literally can't recognize a person by their facial features.
So he's written a book called The Mind's Eye, and he covers six different people who had to adjust to various visual challenges. So you can check that out if interested. MPAA, Motion Picture Association of America, is sending letters to the presidents of various colleges and universities, basically bringing to their attention something called the Anti-Infringement Provisions of the Higher Education Opportunities Act of 2008, HEOA, basically saying that they can cut off infringing students or face potentially crippling consequences. And those would be either state funding for the school or a loss of student aid for the students. And while the MPAA doesn't have the ability to do that directly, they certainly do have hundreds of millions of dollars to lobby Congress to enforce those provisions of the HEOA. In advocacy news, looks like blind students are demanding online course materials. We talked earlier about the NFB lawsuit against Penn State, but that's certainly not an isolated incident. This particular article talks about someone many of us know, Daryl Shandro, and how he's using Foursquare for various navigation throughout Arizona State University, but has recently found himself in a bind because he can't access the Spanish 101, which uses online workbooks in accessible format. Not only that, but he can't get into the newly built student union, and the campus has a Facebook site specifically for Arizona State that he cannot use. Now, I want to back up a little bit. Ricky, I know you play around with Foursquare, and a lot of us kind of made fun of it, but I really didn't realize that it's kind of being used as a navigation tool.
I didn't either, and that sort of struck me when I was reading the article. I suppose you can use it to see what's around you, and maybe based on the five nearest things, you can determine, okay, I'm getting closer to where I need to be, but I've certainly never used this as a navigation tool, and I guess it just goes to show you that whatever is out there, people will find very unique uses that were not at all intended by the developers, and I think that's great. One thing I wanted to mention was in this article, they talk about another student who they interviewed. I don't know if she's currently attending school or if she was fairly recently or whatever, but in any case, she was a student, you know, back in the 70s at least, and she was talking about using a typewriter to submit all her assignments. And she was talking about having readers for her books, even before being able to scan them was an option. And her take was, you know, we had it a lot harder back in my day, so to speak. And I don't think she understood why Daryl and people like him were making such a big deal about inaccessible things. But it's interesting because even when I was in school, I didn't have as hard a time, but I did have to advocate for myself in some things. And I'd like to think that that has changed it for the better for the people coming after me. So even though we may say, well, things were really hard and we had to walk up the hill both ways in the snow, what are you complaining about? I think it's necessary that we have people to advocate for what they want. And 20 years down the road, we're going to have, you know, a new set of challenges because hopefully we've advocated our way through the current ones.
I cannot agree with you more. I think also, though, there's a loss of perspective sometimes, too, that, you know, you can do some of these things without technology, abacus included. But, you know, just a couple of years ago, GPS was not as smart. So if you went to a major college campus, it wasn't necessarily marked. So if you were, say, at a major college campus like Texas Tech, you would just have, you're at Texas Tech. And these things have gotten a lot smarter over the years to be able to say you're standing in front of the blank. And it is due to things like Foursquare, where you can actually be the mayor of a certain building or something like that. These new challenges are definitely the new form of access. And I think it does behoove some of us old farts to go out there and learn a little bit about it instead of telling you to use kids to get off my lawn.
On that note, other accessibility stuff, ACB has posted their comments to the FCC concerning advanced communications provisions of the 21st Century Communications and Video Accessibility Act of 2010. That's a long sentence I wrote there. Specifically talking about items 716, 717, and 718. You can read more because it is kind of a lengthy post and they went into all their recommendations to the FCC. Check it out at cerotalk.com. In an interview with the CBC, that's in that there Canada, Ray Kurzweil talks about Blio and says it's coming out very shortly for the iPhone and Android. So, of course, my cynical question is, will that be before we can actually access and use it on Windows? But anyway, he claims it's coming soon in those operating systems, but also talks about its benefit over things like Google and the Kindle is synchronized highlighting. And then, of course, that it's not just for blind folks, but also dyslexic, slow readers, people where English is their second language. And he points out something I didn't know. I hope this is not exaggerated. Actually, I hope it is exaggerated. He claims that about half of the population has some form of reading difficulty.
Really?
Yes.
That's a lot of folks. I would have said maybe 20%, perhaps 25%. And I would have thought that was being generous. But 50%? That's amazing.
Well, I could see it maybe if he's talking about like a 12th grade reading level and the ability to read, you know, flawlessly, say to read a piece of copy or read without stuttering or, you know, I don't know what he means by that.
Okay, that would make sense, yeah.
It would depend how you define it. I mean, is it a cognitive thing? Is it an educational thing? Is it the glass is half empty rather than half full? Ray is always sometimes a little out there, especially if you start reading some of his books about the singularity and his desire for artificial intelligence and expanding your lifespan and all of that. So with Ray, it's always the devil is in the details. So I'm surprised that he kind of said that in a way, because usually he's more specific. Of course, you know, knowing Ray, he probably has like an entire book of statistics to back this up. So I don't know if we want this kind of detail, but I'm sure it's out there if we really pressed.
Well, there was an abbreviated article, so it may have went into greater detail. But he also talked about an artificial vocal cord that was created in 2007. I was not aware of that. I'm hearing like Ned on South Park now, you know, but
yeah.
What could you mean, Michael?
Nothing much, Joel. I kind of sound like eloquence. No.
No, you don't. That's a lie. Or then again, maybe not.
Anyway, Amazon's Kindle for the web has actually launched a service now so users can actually read full books from within the browser. And the article, interestingly enough, says, well, I can't imagine why anyone would want to do that. Well, close your eyes for a minute and you see why some of us may need that feature.
I actually checked this out and I was afraid that it was going to be a really horrible experience where you had to click the next button in some weird place on the page just to be able to read the next page. But it's actually laid out quite nicely where the chapters are separated by headings and there are also links in a table of contents. So it's really easy and really pleasant to be able to read a book like that. No accessibility challenges whatsoever. Now, of course, you aren't going to have the capability to bookmark or something like that. But if you've ever read in a browser for anything else, then you're accustomed to that. So you're just going to have to either remember which chapter you were on or whatever whenever you launch that book again.
So the book is all on one page, or do you have separate pages for each chapter? How is it broken down?
No, it is all on one page. So you have a table of contents with links at the top, and then each chapter is a heading level 2, which you can jump to quite easily using quick navigation keys. But it is all on one page, so you can do what I used to do pretty frequently, get a pair of wireless headphones, set the screen reader on say all, and walk away from the machine and have it read to you.
Very cool. Few things in the gaming world here. It looks like RS Games, makers of Monopoly, and Uno, which has become very popular in the Samnet gaming chat rooms. We have 4 rooms specifically for gaming, and I've seen all 4 of them going at once with people playing Uno in different groups. But they're testing out a new version of Yahtzee, or so it's been reported. We've heard nothing official, although they have been looking for beta testers, and I think a few of our Samnet members are on that team. So, look for some Yahtzee action coming out soon, maybe, possibly. And on a related note to Ricky, I know you're a big fan of All in Play. Last year around this time, they had a end of the year kind of special, almost half off subscription. So if you want 90 days or a full year of All in Play, this may be the time to take advantage of that now through December 31st.
Right on.
Internet security news here to combat a recent rash of history-sniffing bugs and nasty malware, mean and nasty things there. Not to mention...
I'm sniffing your history. That's crazy.
Mm. Also, also combined with Federal Trade Commission's proposed do not track list, Internet Explorer 9 will have a feature for tracking protection that you can basically set to keep out particular websites that you don't want to capture your browsing history. Users will be able to opt out and also be able to create a whitelist of websites to include to say, yes, I want to share everything with you and tell you every single thing I'm doing in my world. So again, that's one of those things that's cool for those of us who are savvy. And I guess for other folks who have not a clue what I'm talking about, it'll be things that make you go, hmm.
I also hope it's a feature that everybody wants to steal and emulate, because if this is going to become something in the Facebook generation that people really start getting serious about security and tracking, then this is great, because I would love to see other people get overzealous about this feature, because, again, go to EFF.org to learn a lot more about your freedoms and what's being tracked and what's not being tracked. EFF being the Electronic Frontier Foundation, great place for some of those resources.
Yeah, we do really need to be concerned. Hopefully, we'll be there in Firefox and Google Chrome, which Chrome recently got a pretty negative review on security. But anyway, the Central IT Office of the Australian Federal Government is telling people they should use technologies other than PDF files, saying while PDF accessibility has improved, it is still not fully usable by the blind community. I think that's pretty interesting, because I've always thought that even the U.S. government, for security purposes, should blow off PDF. But, you know, I'm going back to the day when, like 10 years ago, when it'd take 3 hours to download a PDF file, and they'd call it portable document format. And I go, what's portable about this? I call it BDF, bloated document format.
And we've been through this fight so many times with the open document format and OXML and so many others. And then we always come back to PDF for some reason. And that's so depressing because of many reasons why. But I too would love to see that this kind of gets struck. It's a double-edged sword. Sometimes you have to have a standardization in order for everybody to be able to access documents equally, but at the same time, that standard ends up pushing maybe something that might work against you in not just accessibility, but maybe some other way. Maybe watermarking is a problem, or maybe you can't alter the color if you're colorblind or something like that. So it's good and it's bad, but it's nice to see someone actually taking a stand on this front, especially with PDF.
And certainly if you have PDF files that are just images and otherwise unusable, you can team them up with Cerotech's DocuScan Plus to get a conversion on those. We can read all those bad boy PDF files, unless, of course, they're password protected, which I guess means you shouldn't be using them. But anyway, that's what's going on.
Shameless plug complete.
www.docuscanplus.com.
Yeah, there man. There we go. The British Standards Institute, BSI, has published a new code of practice. This describes the process to ensure that websites and online services provided by organizations are accessible to the blind. And I think this is interesting because it says that this new BS, whatever, 8878-2010, was launched on December 7th, and it's not actually a document of technical specification, but actually gives logical reasons why accessibility should be an integral part of your planning, design, and also gives some legislative, commercial, and ethical reasons why you should be doing the right thing, and actually points over to the WCAG. That's great. Except for those folks who just kind of cut and paste and use templates and don't really have a clue about HTML and XML and all the other languages used to build websites. But I'm really glad to see them make this effort.
Well, let's get a couple more acronyms in there. The WCAG, the W3C. I think look, Ricky, my alphabets are telling me a message. It says, ooh. your line there is from Family Guy, those are Cheerios.
Yes, I couldn't say it because I was laughing.
You can say it now.
Those are Cheerios. You should have done the lowest thing. Anyway, carrying on.
But cheerio to the UK.
For coming out with these British standards. No, that was all.
Yes, indeed.
Actually, it's not bad.
On the file sharing front here, while Dropbox 1.0 is released, Christopher Toth, also known as Mongoose Q, posted on Twitter, via Twitter, a Dropbox alternative that people may want to look into is for storing your own data. It's called ArrowFS, and it uses peer-to-peer technology, including cloud or no cloud. Yes, you can even set this up on your LAN, more acronyms for you, without internet, and actually transfer files between all of your computers.
Yeah, now that's the part that really struck my fancy, as it were, is that you don't have to be connected to the net to do this. You can do it within your own intranet or home network, or you can have it on the cloud and you can connect with people regardless of where they are. It will establish a secure connection between the two devices that you're trying to sync, and then you're good to go.
That's right. It says online storage is an option available to you, giving you greater availability at the cost of privacy and security, but it does have 1024-bit RSA encryption even between your devices. So there'll be versions free for Windows, Mac, and Linux, but it is still an alpha, and as of now, you can only submit your email to be notified, or you can ask someone who is already using the technology. So, geez, do we have any friends out there? Resources at serotalk.com. Anyone out there using Arrow? And how accessible is it? We'd like to play around with that. That's a really cool technology.
Yes.
Back to the land of self-promotion, Serotalk and Serotech are giving away not one, not two, but three gift cards for the holidays. All you have to do is tell us your favorite 2010 podcast moment. Just send an email to resources at serotalk.com with your first name, your last name, your email address if it's something different than the one you're using, and tell us the number of the podcast or tech chat, and specifically the segment or what you liked or maybe didn't like. We already got one. Someone was upset with Mikey about his NLS comments, but whatever.
Oh.
Yeah, whatever y'all fancy for 2010, just send that over to us. The drawing deadline is December 30 at midnight Eastern U.S., and we will draw and announce our winner New Year's Eve, December 31, around noonish.
But don't worry, if you don't win one of these gift cards, you can still send a link to your friends and family, serotech.com/giftcards, and tell them to buy you a little something-something for Christmas. Now they don't have to know what kind of AT you want, whether you want new voices, you want a subscription to Samnet, whatever. They don't need to know about that. They just need to give you the ability to purchase it.
So check it out, serotech.com/giftcard. Many folks don't know, in addition to the Serotalk blog, we also have the Serotech blog. It's blog.serotech.com. Peter Bosley posted to the Serotech blog an article on crowdsourcing as a software development tool, basically talking about the way that we put together DocuScan Plus. Most companies basically kind of go into a vacuum. They write their spec, they hand it to their programmers, and they play around with it and beta test it internally. But we took a different approach with DocuScan Plus and actually had quite a number of folks in the community involved, and people were even able to purchase it early and meet with us every Tuesday evening and give us their 2 cents. And we think it's made it a much better product as a result. So read that if you're interested about taking AT to a all new level. And finally, in the shameless plug department, you can read Mike Calvo's speech, "Lack of Sight Doesn't Mean Lack of Vision." It's a great document, and if you don't want to hear him ramble, as he did the presentation to the Mid-Atlantic ACB conference, you can actually read the speech, which is a well-written and great document, so check it out. And I've told Mikey that I think he should write a book, So once in a great while, he takes my advice. So we'll see what happens there. NFB Newsline is now offering job listings via CareerBuilder.com. In Tech Chat 81, Scott White and Stephen Tompkins joined us and shared four of the latest innovations. And we got to hear a demo of the new jobs listing service. But now it is available for all folks to go over there and check out. So only on the telephone right now. But if interested, if you haven't done so, subscribe to NFB Newsline. If you want more information about how it works, by all means, listen to Tech Chat 81. Here's a sample of what the new job listing service sounds like.
Welcome to Job Listings powered by Career Builder. Before Newsline can present your customized job listings, you must answer a few quick questions about your job search criteria. Using the touch tone keypad on your telephone, please enter your 5-digit zip code. You have selected a zip code for Ellicott City, Maryland. If this is correct, press 1. Otherwise, press 2. Please select a job search category. Accounting, press 10. Admin, clerical, press 11. Automotive, press 12. Human resources, press 36. Information technology, press 37. Welcome to Job Listings powered by Career Builder. To change your setup, press 1. To view all your job search results, press 2. To view your saved jobs, press 3. To view only new jobs, press 4. To view only previously reviewed jobs, press 5. To view only discarded jobs, press 6. Your job search phrase is blank. Press 1 to continue or press 2 to enter a search phrase. Please be patient while Newsline pulls up your job search results. Newsline found 4 job listings. Job 1. Job title: Project Manager. Company: ACS. General information: location: US Maryland Essex. Job type: information technology. Base pay: not available. Required education: 4-year degree. Employee type: full-time. Required experience: at least 3-year. S. Required travel: up to 25%. Manages others: false. Relocation covered: false. Job description: Affiliated Computer Services Incorporated. ACS is expertise in action. We are a Fortune 500 company with 74,000 employees worldwide, supporting client operations reaching more than 100 countries. Job 3. Job title: Senior Java Engineer. Senior Software Engineer. Company: CyberCoders Engineering. General information: location: US Maryland Baltimore. Job type: Information Technology Engineering Professional Services. Base pay: $75,000-$140,000/year. Required education: none. Employee type: full-time. Required experience: at least 3-year. S. Required travel: not specified. Manages others: false. Relocation covered: false. Job description: This position is open as of April 20, 2010. Senior Java Engineer, Senior Software Engineer, J2EE, Java Beans, JSP, Senior Java Engineer, Senior Software Engineer.
Hello, this is Richard Wells in Quality Assurance at Ceratec. I just wanted to stop and take a moment to wish you all a very Merry Christmas, have an accessible new year, and may you find contentment in the days ahead.
In cell phone news, Consumer Reports readers rank AT&T as the worst carrier in the U.S.
No, this is my shocked face.
AT&T is the only cell phone provider whose rankings dropped massively in the year 2010.
And except, that's gotta hurt.
Yeah, and except for texting, AT&T earned the worst possible score in the areas of value, service, and customer support. Basically, users said, "You suck."
Yeah, pretty much. And AT&T naturally responded with,
"We are taking this feedback extremely seriously and will do all we can to improve your experiences."
Message 2, NC01MN.
Actually, the carrier with the highest ranking this year was U.S. Cellular, serving 26 states in the Midwest and South. But yeah, AT&T probably should take that stuff seriously, because if the rumors are true that Verizon may be launching their own LTE 4G capable iPhone after Christmas or sometime in 2011. We'll have to see what happens there. That sounds like a good deal, but some said, "Gee, I think I'll wait for Verizon. Maybe I'll save money." Well, first of all, I don't think you will save any money with Verizon over AT&T, but especially if they tie this to a 4G phone, where we talked in our last podcast that for 10 gig, you're going to have to pay $80 a month. I'll be curious to see what happens there. Yikes.
And again, I think we take the approach that I will believe that it's on Verizon when I'm holding a phone from Verizon in my hand that says Verizon when I turn it on next to the Apple logo, because we've played this game so many times, and I don't care how many leaked Foxconn pictures come out, I just won't believe it until it's in my hand.
Yeah, I'm with you, but I think this is pretty likely. The rumors seem to have a little more meat in them lately than previous ones did. And I'm hoping this does happen, because I think that AT&T has gotten really complacent, and it's, well, it's obvious based on the kinds of ratings that they've gotten. They don't really care. Hey, we've got your money. It doesn't really matter. I think they need to see a bit more competition, and a Verizon iPhone could make things interesting for them.
Yeah, there's also in the rumor mill that Verizon may be working on a little deal with Apple. I don't know how, but to actually keep the iPhone away from the hands of folks like Sprint and T-Mobile. So that's from our rumor mill, folks. Well, it looks like Ars Technica did a review of Dragon Dictate 2.0 for the Mac. And I just bought the actual Windows version. They had kind of a, I want to call it the Black Friday after. It was a week after official Black Friday. And they had $100 off the Windows version, $50 off the Mac version. But you can get that for the Mac if interested for $199. Some of us who own Mac Speech Dictate might just be able to get a discount upgrade on that. And as we go into Mac news, I'm going to have to ask, Ricky, you just got yourself a MacBook. Actually, you had it when we did our last podcast, but I know you didn't have enough time to play around with it just yet. But I'm going to ask you on the spot, on the fly here, what are your initial impressions? How are you feeling about the device?
I really love it. Now, I will say that the first probably 3 or 4 hours that I was playing with it, the navigation for me was very intuitive. I could use my trackpad to do things just as I would on my phone, or I could use keyboard voiceover navigation. And so that part was not such a shock to me. I didn't really find an issue with any of that. What I really struggled with for a little bit was, you know, hey, guess what? It's a different operating system. Things are located in different places than they are on Windows. There's a different way of doing things, and there's a sort of different headspace that you have to get into when you're working on the Mac. So it was more of a culture shock in terms of the operating system than it was really learning how to use the screen reader and that kind of thing. But just as with many things, I wanted to curse and throw it out the window for a little bit. And then suddenly something just clicked, and I'm feeling really comfortable on it, so much so that I now find myself trying to do things in Windows the Mac way, and for some reason that doesn't work.
You sure that's just not guilt of all the money you spent on the Apple tax, Ricky?
Hey, no, I
Stockholm syndrome, is that what it is? You were just spent so much time with it, you fell in love. Listen to me, of course.
All right, Mr. Joe.
Yeah,
all right, Mr. Joe Apple
iPad on his desk.
I was going to give him the chance to fess up, but no, it's the cat's out of the bag. Joe's got an iPad.
Yeah, and I thought
you were an Apple hater. You were such a hater.
Yeah, I'm a Windows realist, not an Apple hater. No, but of course, you know, in all great ways of me doing things bass-ackwards, I have an iPad right as we're facing down the ability of looking at an iPad 2.
That's right, coming in April.
Naturally.
Coming in April 2011 is the second generation of the iPad, with production to begin in February. They should have about 600,000 units on hand. And hopefully we'll have a camera for those FaceTime calls and folks who want to do OCR and cool stuff like that. Gyroscope for anyone who needs to be...
Why would you want to do this?
They're going to be exercising.
It really strikes me as funny. You're just waving this big tablet thing around. Woo, look at me. I've got an iPad. I'm going to swing it around and watch what happens.
If you drop it or something like that, I'll probably have some way of detecting that it had a 5 foot fall or some other Apple Care moment. But honestly, it is kind of seriously funny to think about carrying around that 10 inch screen and lightsaber app with your iPad.
I think I just got beat by the dark side.
If everything holds true, usually Apple likes to announce this in January, tends to be the iPad month, or believed iPad month. And so probably we'll hear more about this as we get closer or shortly after CES.
Definitely. An update has been issued for Apple TV to resolve some issues, both resolution and downloading. I know Mike Calvo's fallen in love. I think he spent all Saturday on the couch grooving with his Apple TV.
Yep.
Yeah, he be doing that. Apple is rolling out 90-second song previews, which is a great idea, because I don't know about you, but 30 seconds is not enough for me to get the vibe on a song if I really want to purchase it. You know, when I used to do radio, I was a music director, and if I was really in a hurry, I would listen to the beginning and kind of cruise through the middle and hear how the song ended, you know. But it needed 90 seconds. I just could not judge a song in 30 seconds, so I'm glad to see that But even more interesting, I just saw something here that says that the iTunes store now has about 66% of all online music purchases. Two out of three people are buying their music through iTunes.
That surprises me, especially because Amazon MP3 is a very nice experience, and you don't purchase it in M4A, which is nice. I really am surprised by that.
It's all those Beatles purchases, you know, exclusively.
Aha,
all.
That must be it.
I crack the code. That has to be it.
Yep.
I buried Paul.
Number nine.
Apple updates the MacBook with new firmware to address display issues. I guess that should have been with the Apple TV story. But anyway, I think this is interesting, worth checking out, that Apple has actually added a special education section to the App Store with over 80 apps for folks with disability and special needs.
Yeah, I think this is pretty cool, given that this is going to be in the App Store for iDevices like the iPad and iPhone and so on. And I can't help but wonder if they're going to do something similar in the App Store for the Mac, which is launching on January 6th. It's nice to see that not only does Apple take accessibility seriously in terms of building their own products, but also in terms of allowing people to find accessible apps, which could be helpful to them as well.
Well, there's a page, it's been up for well over a year on Apple, of apps that work with VoiceOver, and they're by category. However, that list has become outdated, and that's the problem a lot of times with these things. But so there's some good starting points for VoiceOver, and we'll have to go check out this link, and we do have it available for you over at serotalk.com. All right, Joe gets to talk a little bit here because we're going to talk about Google stuff. Rawr, humbug.
Rawr.
Unfortunately, this is more apt than you think.
Let's begin. So Google launches an ebook store with your choice of inaccessible devices. What do you want to say about that,
Yay,
Mr. Joe?
Google.
Yeah, that definitely does seem to be the trend for 2011. There's a good and a bad with Google, and the good is you have plenty of choice. The bad is that you have the same choice in a lot of cases, which is slim to none. And you know, I'm kind of excited and depressed at the same time, because the more of these devices, the more there's a need for accessibility. But it does take a lot of advocacy and people to start using these devices to impress upon those in the Google Cloud that we need this kind of thing up front. Because, again, if you're looking for something from an end-to-end experience, I won't begrudge you anything to say that Apple is a great product for that. If you're looking for something to allow you to have a shorter learning curve, then Apple is definitely a great opportunity for you to get into computing. Google is a lot about self-discovery, and in this situation, it is a matter of, well, that didn't work. Let me try this.
I was really disappointed, though unfortunately not that surprised, by Google Books. It was launched, and there's an iPhone app for it, and you can read the books in a browser and, of course, on various other devices. When trying to read these books in a browser, what you do get, unlike the Kindle book in browser experience, what you get with Google is a single page that you can read, and then you do have to hunt for a next button and click it to turn the page and continue doing that throughout your whole book. And it's not a very graceful experience. They do have an iPhone app as well, and this too was inaccessible. You can sort of see the text in the book, but you have to look at the very left side of the iPhone screen, and so you can't navigate through it very easily by character or word or whatever. And the same thing holds true that you have to turn pages, except that you can't see any of the buttons to do that, nor can you see the menu or anything like that. And this is true just after, say, a 15 or 20 minute look at the app. There may very well be some workarounds, but if the average user can't pick up an iDevice and immediately figure out how to do this, then it's not a really good experience. And some of you may be wondering, well, why couldn't you just import this thing into iBooks? Because Google Books are either EPUB or PDF. But they have a .acsm file extension, which I forget what that stands for. Adobe Content Server Message, I think. In any case, this is the DRM for the books. And so you could open this using Adobe Editions on the PC or using something like an inaccessible Nook or Sony e-reader, but you cannot open it just as a plain EPUB, so that really limits your ability to take it over anywhere else.
And I have to confess, I haven't really played with it much with Android, but generally most browser-based content requires you to use something like Ideal K9 to be able to do web browsing. And, you know, that has good and bad. Generally, I am one of these guys that doesn't necessarily surf the web through my Android phone. I do a lot more application usage than I do reading the web. And I'm not sure if I would do a lot of reading with this anyway, and I know that's kind of self-indulgent of me to say that, but there are other ways of doing some of the reading, like through Gutenberg Project and other products that we've talked about before in the Android podcast.
Well, I hope you do some voice recognition, or I'm not even sure if your phone's capable of this, but Google is adding personal voice recognition to its online voice search, powering Android and iOS devices and automated voicemail transcription. It claims to work regardless of age, gender, and various accents. The special Android voice search will offer an opt-in option to actually make voice recordings and have them uploaded to improve the recognition over time and storing various voice commands. This is only available for Android 2.2 or higher. Currently only supports U.S. English with other language to be added.
I'm depressed because that means I can't do it on my Ally yet. So another great part about Android accessibility is sometimes those of us on an older version can't necessarily take advantage of some of the advanced features on some of the newer parts of the Android operating system. But Google is purchasing a lot of companies involving speech recognition and speech synthesis. So something is definitely heading towards a nexus point in these areas.
And speaking of throwing things up against the wall and seeing if they stick, Google has unveiled their CR48. It's their first laptop running the Chrome operating system. Spoke with Pete Bosley about it. It does have some limited but built-in video magnification, but absolutely no speech. And I can hear it now, Jim Nabors. Surprise, surprise, surprise.
Exactly.
It's even weirder than that because there is no caps lock key. It's replaced by the Google search button, and the function keys are not function keys anymore. There's one for back, one for forward, and some other web type content. So just their approach on keyboard navigation is going to be very different for us and involve a learning curve for those of us who are truly dedicated to our keyboard nav. And of course, this is way super alpha, so things could change, but it's definitely another UI change that Google likes to do from time to time that will require more discovery for accessibility.
Well, I wonder how the open source Google feels about the fact that apparently these CR48s have already been modded to allow dual boot of Ubuntu. So at least we can make the thing talk.
I think that's funny. I doubt they do.
Yeah, I'm just not seeing them see the humor in that. But blind people are expressing some really strong, and I don't know what word to use, disgust with the latest accessibility or lack thereof in Android 2.3 Gingerbread. We're going to do a podcast about the good and the bad of Android in its current state on December 23rd. But Joe, I'll let you talk about that story.
Yeah, I hate to be another Debbie Downer on this, but man, it is just actually really not spinning the way that we need it to for accessibility. Nolan Derelict of Spiel fame has talked a lot about, and we've talked about this on a previous podcast, some of the disappointments going forward. And recently the Android App Store has, well, at least for Verizon at least, has updated, and there are some advantages to it that you can actually use your directional key to be able to do more up and down motion and be able to hear buttons a little better rather than just rolling your finger around and praying that you got the right spot to click the install button. So there's definitely a movement there, but at the same time, recently, it was like a month or so ago, one of the heads of Google said that Chrome was for keyboards and Android was for touch. So there even seems to be a bit of a misunderstanding amongst the Google elite at what the operating system is and how you're supposed to access it, which then, of course, carries over to how do we access it? And so we're starting to really hear some guys that were really, really, you know, big Google fans and promoting a lot of things about it start to wonder about what's going next and how we get there next. Now, the advantage to this, though, is the fragmentation of all things. The thing I just complained about a moment ago actually works in my favor using an older Android phone, because I can still stay back and use the things that are accessible now with Android 2.1, being that with K9 and Spiel and TalkBack and all of that, without having to worry about 2.3. So one of the great features about Google's fragmentation is actually working for me than against me in this situation.
Well, it sounds like Microsoft all over again, but...
That's Windows Phone. Oh. That's another yes. argument for another time. That gets back to, if you're worried about AT&T and going to Verizon with your iPhone, just wait. You'll have another inaccessible phone coming with Windows Phone 7.
Yeah, buddy. The NFB and ACB are both commending the U.S. House of Representatives and Senate for passing the safety legislation. This will protect not only blind folks, but sighted community as well. And basically, it's to eliminate really silent vehicles. NFB president says we need sound to determine speed and direction. And it's especially helpful for small children who may be walking down the street and not paying attention. Not children, adults, people talking on their cell phones. So, yeah, make those vehicles do something.
Actually, a guy got killed by a train because he was wearing headphones and he was a sighted guy. So this happens to people. I mean, sighted people depend on sound cues in their environment for things as well. But I don't think they really realize that. And you can tell if you look at the comments on these various articles talking about the bill being passed by the House and so on. The comments are, oh, well, what's up? These people don't have anything to do but sit around and pass stupid bills. And I mean, they literally think that they're spending, you know, valuable taxpayer money and wasting a lot of time for something that is not important.
We have to appeal to their vanity, Ricky. See, this is how we do it. We make an app store with ringtones for cars. So that way, you have different rings and you have different ideas out there. So you could have, say, I don't know, the theme to Battlestar Galactica when you're parking. You know, it just...
Sweet! Or it has some sort of sensor that when it senses an object a particular distance from it, it'll start playing something.
I like this idea. There seems to be a market here and the ability for people to accessorize their vehicle in a new way.
That's right.
But then will they have provisions like we have now with a lot of the audible traffic signals? Well, it must be quieter after midnight because I don't want that coming through my neighborhood and waking me up. I wonder if they thought that one yet.
Oh, yeah. So it kind of reminds me of the La Cucaracha horn that Homer's car played in The Simpsons.
Oh,
I do.
That was the car that was to appeal to every man.
And, that's right.
The every man was going to have a La Cucaracha horn. I do remember that. Can't remember the name of the car, though. That's going to drive me crazy. Now, writer, if we don't remember it by next podcast, send it on in
at resources@saratech.com.
That's right. And on this legislation, it's been sent to the White House, and it's hoped that Mr. President Obama will sign it into law before the end of 2010. Our final story in the Human Interest Department, folks, it is not a myth. You can go blind having sex. Or at least some women can, at least temporarily after an orgasm.
Yeah, apparently it's vasoconstriction. Your blood vessels sort of shrink near your eye area, at least for some women. But it is temporary. It goes away after a little while. But I still want a t-shirt or just to say this to somebody, you know, how did you go blind? Well, you know that thing your mama always said about, is that your white cane or are you just happy to see me?
The sex was so good, the neighbors got a guide dog. That's all we have here. Please do take a chance, and register to win one of the Serotech gift cards, $150 and $225. Just send us your favorite 2010 Serotalk podcast or tech chat moment.
And with that, we will wish you a very Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays from everybody on the Serotech team.
Hi, this is Patrick Perdue, your podcast editor. And I just wanted to take this opportunity to wish each and every one of you listening to this podcast a Merry Christmas and a happy and safe 2011. You know, I've only been here for a couple of months, but working with the Serotech team has been absolutely awesome, and I can't wait to see what happens in 2011. Happy holidays, everybody!
Back To review another product is our friend from Australia, Scott Rakowski, and today he's going to show us the Plantronics Audio 995. It's a wireless headset with a pretty decent quality microphone, as you're about to hear as we are talking on Skype.
Hello, Michael.
Hey, Scotty. So tell us about the new Audio 995. For those of us who'd like to walk around and actually have Skype conversations without being tethered to our computer, as well as play music in stereo, this is a model to look at.
It is. I've been looking for something like this for a while, and I've got one of the other models of wireless headset from Plantronics, but it's only a one-ear design. It's not a stereo headset where you can play your music through like you can with this one. But the thing I like about this headset, it's very, very cheap. It's only $58 on Amazon.com. But the thing I like about this headset is that it's closed cans. The quality of the microphone is really, really nice. The thing that's a little hard to get used to is when you've got these on, everything around you sounds muffled like you get with a closed pair of headphones. But the good thing is, using it for editing audio and things like that, you actually hear the audio beautifully through the headset. And the treble could be a bit better when you're listening to music, but that's my only disappointment with the headset. It's got a quick mute function. It's got a boom mic. So if I push it right up here, the end of the microphone moves in and out about an inch or two. So you can move it away more from your mouth if there's too many pops on the P's.
Possible downside, you said, well, it's great and has 8 hours of battery life. The problem is it gives you no warning when it's about to die and it just shuts off.
No, it's only got lights that change when the battery's dying. If you can't see the lights, you have no idea whether the headset is dying or not, unfortunately. To charge it up, you plug the USB cable that's supplied with the headset into the mini USB port on the bottom of the left ear cup where all the controls are located, and plug it into your Mac or PC, and it charges within 2 hours.
Okay, so let's talk about the controls that are on the left ear cup.
On the left ear cup, you have four controls. Up and down volume are distinct. They're like little arrows on all the controls, actually. So the up is at the top of the cup and down is at the bottom of the cup. Side of the cup is the power button. You don't get a beep or anything when it turns on and off, but you do hear in the headset that the speakers power up. So you can tell a slight hiss that you get from any kind of headphones that you listen through. On the left side, you've got your pause and play function, and the right hand control, you've got the forward option. There's no skip back. It says that it only works with iTunes and Windows Media Player, but I've actually loaded it up in Winamp. I got to do a bit more testing, but it definitely works with Windows Media Player and iTunes. Nothing on the right ear cup. I think there might be a light or something. And I think as well the battery is non-user replaceable. So I don't know what happens when your battery life diminishes. I guess you could send it back to Plantronics for a replacement.
Okay, so explain how you connect it to charge it. You have a little mini USB type dongle?
You don't charge it with the dongle. Think of a thumb drive, like a U3 thumb drive, and that plugs into the Mac or PC USB port, and then when you turn on the headset, it comes up in Windows as a Plantronics wireless audio device. Basically, when I plugged the dongle in Windows 7, it just said installing device drivers, waited for about a minute or two, and then it just came up and said your device is now ready to use. And then when I went into Skype's audio properties, I basically selected Plantronics wireless audio for the microphone and speakers. You just plug the little USB cable into the bottom left cup and the other end into your Mac or PC. It is a short cable, so be aware of that. But you cannot use the headset while it's on charge. It disables it from being used.
Okay, so ultimately you will need two USB ports, one for the dongle and one to charge.
Or you could just unplug your dongle and charge it from that port if you're not using the headset at the time, because you can't use it when it's charging anyway.
Now, you said the treble's a little bit lacking to your taste. What about the bass response?
The bass is booming. It's very, very nice, the bass. The treble could be better, but I guess this headset was not made for hi-fi listening. It was more meant for listening through your computer, using it for dictation, Skype chat, and for $58, you can't expect a Sennheiser headset. For the money, I think it's well worth the $58 on Amazon, and I recommend it to anybody who's looking for a wireless 40-foot range headset, it actually seemed to go a fair way. If you don't have any obstructions like walls, and you can actually get quite a distance. According to a friend of mine who's also got the same headset, she can move from one end of her home to the other.
Do we know what frequency this works on?
It doesn't actually mention the frequency. It doesn't even say that it's Bluetooth. I've read a couple of places that it says Bluetooth, and other places say that it's using some sort of wireless technology. I don't know if it's the same frequency as a 2.4 gigahertz. I've had no interference from anything else in my home, and as soon as I plugged this in, it just worked straight out of the box. No problems at all. It's very, very good quality, and I just love the comfortable wearing style on the headset, and it's got beautiful foam padding. And it's got a nice padded headband as well, so you can wear it for hours, and all the background sounds are muffled. Noise-cancelling microphone too, as well, I've heard, so yeah.
Well, good deal. Yeah, it seems to eliminate any background noise. Certainly maybe not the high-end frequency response you might get with a wired device, but certainly great for the portability. And as you hear, great quality, should meet the needs of any user on Samnet chat or user of Skype or other Ventrilo, other voice chat technology. If you like it, folks, check it out. It's simply the Plantronics Audio 995 headset, available at Amazon.com. That's $58 US.
That's correct.
All right, very good. Well, thank you very much, Scotty.
Thank you.
Listening to Serotalk. Visit us at www.serotalk.com. Send us an email at resources@serotalk.com or leave us a voicemail at 866-997-BLAB 2522. We may read your email or play your voicemail in the next podcast. Join us in 2 weeks as we explore all the internet and life has to offer. Until then, may you have an accessible digital life.